This is CS50, and over the summer have we been holding a number of these live sessions, some of them office hours with myself, with CS50's own Brian Yu, and with some of our past and present staff. We've also tried offering a number of topic-specific classes, for instance, on security with me, on artificial intelligence with Brian, and today on emojis with a very special friend of ours, Jennifer Eight Lee, who'll be joining us remotely via Zoom as well. But before we get to those emojis, allow me to give you a bit of background. If you've taken CS50X itself, or CS50 on campus here or elsewhere, you'll recall perhaps that emojis aren't actually all that dissimilar from other characters we might type on the screen. So on my screen here, you'll actually see a screenshot from Instagram. And by amazing coincidence, 1 year ago today, I happened to post these two photographs that were composited together by CS50's own Cheng Gong, one of our former teaching fellows. And he made the very astute observation that apparently for 20 years have I been teaching in CS50 emojis, or formerly emoticons in some form. So on the screen here at the very top is a picture of emoticons that I drew with chalk on a chalkboard in 1999 in the very first class I ever taught. And on the bottom do you have in fall 2018 in CS50 the much more digital version of these things. And these are actually even more than emojis. These are apples and emojis that actually come to life. And so it would seem for 20 years all we've been teaching is emojis, but they're actually quite interesting, and today we'll understand how an emoji ultimately becomes an emoji. But what is an emoji itself exactly? Well, this of course is the face of tears, face with tears of joy, a very smiling, happy face. But does anyone know exactly how this emoji is implemented underneath the hood? What is an emoji? If someone would be comfortable raising a blue hand via Zoom.
All right.
Kingsley, would you like to answer what an emoji is for everyone?
For my own idea, I think it's a sort of imaginary display of emotions. Using images to express emotions.
Really well said, using images to express emotion. And that's indeed the case. And recall, if you've taken CS50 already, whether on campus or online, underneath the hood at the end of the day, as Kamal says, these really are just bits. In fact, that face with tears of joy simply happens to be represented inside of your Mac, your PC, your Android phone, your iPhone, or any other device these days, really is just a number, a decimal number. In fact, 128,514. If you're familiar from CS50 with binary or zeros and ones, you might recall that this pattern of ones and zeros is exactly the same thing as that number, 128,514. So when you send an emoji or receive an emoji in an email or text or some other medium, really all you're receiving is a number, or really this sequence of zeros and ones. And equivalently, when you type out one of these characters, you're typing something called a Unicode character, which we'll hear more about today, which is simply a mapping between those numbers and, as you say, Kingsley, those images. So if you think about a typical keyboard, for instance, this one here is a standard US English keyboard, there's only a finite number of keys, of course, on that keyboard. There are fancy menus nowadays that allow you to access things like accented characters and more. And whether you have a Mac or a PC or Android or iPhone, odds are there's even an emoji menu these days that allows you to point and click at one of these emojis. But really, if we had hundreds of more keys on our keyboard, that's all an emoji would be. It's indeed an emotion that's depicted in an image. It's indeed a mapping between an image and a number, but it really is just a keystroke of sorts that these days appears in the menu only because there's so many of them. Now, I'm so pleased that today we'll be joined by a good friend of mine and a classmate from Harvard. A well-known reporter and producer, writer, and so many other things. But today's focus, of course, is on emojis. And Jennifer Eight Lee, who's with us here today, is one of the founders of Emoji Nation. And Jenny, more so than really anyone who's ever talked to me about emojis, really got me thinking about them a lot more thoughtfully, so to speak. Some years ago, I rather kept waving my hand or even rolling my eyes, not unlike the emoji, at the proliferation of emojis and how they were starting to dominate our text messages and emails. But really, as we'll learn today, there's so much more to them. They do convey emotion. They do allow different cultures and people to represent information and their own spoken or written languages. And there's so much more than to Unicode and, in turn, this one form of them, emojis. So without further ado, my dear friend and very well known, Jennifer Eight Lee.
Hi. I'm Jenny. I actually took CS50 as a freshman many, many years ago. And one of the things I do actually is I help regulate emoji. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how I do that. And I'm going to explain how an emoji becomes an emoji by sharing my screen, which hopefully will work. This is it's one of my most fun lectures, which is sort of evangelizing about emoji around the world. And one of the first questions that I have is, there are some very, very strange emoji on the keyboard, and it's always a little bit mysterious what they are. So at the end of this, if you guys can vote, and I will tell you, you know, what some of the most strange emoji that are on your keyboard are, and you can do a poll. I feel it's such an interesting. There's a lot going on in the emoji keyboard, and sometimes I even have to Google what some of these emoji are. But I find that it's fun to kind of like dig around with the emoji and figure out, like, you know, where they come from. Wow, that was like the last one. The last yellow squiggly one was actually one I just added randomly, because I actually did not even know necessarily what it was. I think that's the one that will win. All right, that sounds cool. I will just keep on going. So all of this started when I was, my tumble down the rabbit hole of emoji started when I was friends with my, a designer named Ying Liu, who's actually very famous for designing the Twitter fail whale. So one day we were, you know, texting each other about dumplings, and because that's what we do, because we're both Chinese-ish women. And she was super excited, and she was like, yum, 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 yum. And then knife and fork. And then she, like, halted and was like, I'm surprised that Apple doesn't have a dumpling emoji. And I was like, oh, that's a really good point. And then, like, half an hour later, suddenly this, like, little picture of a emoji, like a little dumpling with heart eyes, popped up on my screen. And I was like, oh, did you make that? And she's like, yeah. And I was like kind of actually puzzled how there could be no dumpling emoji, right? Because in some ways, dumplings are a universal food. And there are lots of, you know, Japanese foods on the emoji keyboard. And since emoji originally came from Japan, you see things like ramen and bento boxes and curry and tempura. You even see like kind of sort of obscure Japanese foods like this dango, you know, this things on a stick, swirly things, which is a fish cake, and even like what I would call a rice, like a triangle rice ball with a bikini wax, but there was no dumpling. And so I was really puzzled. I was like, how could there be no dumpling emoji? Because dumplings are universal food, you know, like there's ravioli and you know, kinkali and momos. And at the same time, emoji were universal. So it told me that the system was broken. And I decided I was going to go fight for a dumpling emoji. And so I just started Googling who controls emoji. And I discovered this organization called the Unicode Consortium. And Unicode, I discovered, was a nonprofit organization in Mountain View, California, that only has, it had like 12 full voting members at that time. So this is 2015. It's Oracle, IBM, Microsoft, Adobe, Google, Apple, Facebook, and Yahoo. And of the non-US multinational tech companies, you had a German company called SAP, a Chinese company called Huawei, and then the government of Oman. So these were the folks that paid $18,000 a year to have full voting power and regulate emoji. And I always felt kind of a little indignant about that like it was mostly tech companies that were regulating this, this product that we use on a human day-to-day basis. But there was a loophole, which is for $75, you can join as a non-voting member of Unicode, which means that you can, you know, go to their meetings and you can sign up on their email list, but, you know, you don't have voting authority. So that's what I did. I signed up, and then the next time they had a meeting, I took a bus and showed up at Apple. And this is, I showed up in a room, and this is basically who controls emoji. I was kind of surprised in part because I thought it would be maybe a larger group of people, maybe a little bit more diverse. These are the kinds of people at that point who were like emoji decision makers. They were kind of older, whiter, male engineers. You know, there was one who even had a t-shirt that said Shadowy Emoji Overlord, who is the president of Unicode, Mark Davis. So I decided that it was, I didn't want the decisions be made by large U.S. like tech companies, and especially not like a demographic that wasn't representative of the world. So we created a group called Emoji Nation, whose motto is to, you know, basically fight for emoji to be more representative and inclusive. And so we did a big dumpling emoji campaign, and we lobbied, you know, in terms of creating the, making a case for the dumpling emoji. And as our motto for Emoji Nation was at that point, it was, you know, emoji by the people, for the people. So we submitted an emoji proposal in 2016. And what was great, it was within a couple months, we actually got, you know, the dumpling passed. And there is Ying with actually at that point, the co-chair of the Unicode Emoji Subcommittee. So not only did we get dumpling, but we got takeout box fortune cookies and chopsticks as well. And now these are the ones that show up in your keyboard in Apple. So I'm kind of curious from people what emoji you think are missing, because I will tell you how to get your ideas through the entire emoji process, if that makes sense. It's very rare that I get a population that is representative of the world. And since a lot of the decision makers are like skew American, I mean, even if they're from Iran or India originally, they skew with an American sensibility. So I will literally take, I will take your answers and kind of show them to the rest of the kind of emoji decision makers making a case, especially for parts of the world where foods aren't well represented. So, you know, Middle East, Latin America, India.
So now is your chance to contribute to the next round of emojis. And here, thanks to Brian, we have a word cloud depicting everyone's answers in real time.
Boba. So good news for the boba people. That should be on, it's on, that's coming this year. So it's arriving on your phones. It's already on Twitter web. If you're on the web, you can find it. Dosa has been one we've been trying to push through. It is hard. And then, and there are many people making biryani as a case. Golf, there are already quite a bit. Dragon fruit. That's interesting. Linux. That's a tricky one. Eyes. Halim. All right. That is good and representative. So the way an emoji, it's actually very complicated somewhat in terms of how an emoji becomes an emoji, and I'll kind of walk you through it. So one of the first things that needs to happen is someone out there has an idea and they write a proposal that then gets submitted to the Unicode Emoji Subcommittee. So it's a group, you know, full of people from Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, some other companies. Now Emoji Nation has like fought our way onto the Emoji Subcommittee. And then, you know, there'll be questions and they'll return it to the person, and they often have to go through a couple cycles in terms of getting, you know, a more rigorous proposal. So when it gets out of Emoji Subcommittee, it gets passed on. But the things that we think about within the Emoji Subcommittee are things like, you know, is it something that is popularly demanded or frequently requested? Does it have multiple usages in meetings? So can you have, you know, like a fox is both a fox, but it can also mean like clever, right? Or elephant can also mean big. And another key thing, if you're dealing with emoji at that small size, is it visually distinct and can it be recognized at a small size? And then something else that we care about is whether or not it's filling a gap of existing emoji. So is it something that can't already be expressed by emoji? So the kinds of things that go against inclusion include, you know, it's too narrow or too specific. So sometimes it's a very specific food or a very specific animal, like a breed of dog or breed of cat. If it's redundant in the terms of something that's already covered. So one year, like a turkey company wanted to do a roast turkey, but we already had a live turkey. So it didn't seem like that was adding too much. Another thing is, at small emoji sizes, you can't really tell what it is. This has been a blocker for like kimchi, which is a Korean side dish. And this one's really big, actually. Because Unicode is universal and kind of neutral, you can't have anything that has like IP around it. So no logos, brands, deities. For some reason, they don't like deities. And no celebrities. So when you hear about like Kimmoji from like... those are actually not really emoji as regulated by Unicode. They're just like stickers, essentially. So once it gets out of the subcommittee, it goes to the full Unicode technical committee, where about four times a year it votes on kind of productive and potential emoji. And then once a year, it actually approves entire slate of emoji that will arrive the next year on computers and phones. And then it gets sent off, you know, once the list is completed. And it takes a while, many, many months, for, you know, Apple and Google and Microsoft to add to all the devices. And then, like, ta-da, that's finally, at the end, it arrives on your devices. And so I would say on average, from when you propose an emoji to when it actually shows up on your phone, it's anywhere between 18 and 24 months. And so we created this group, like I mentioned, called Emoji Nation. And, you know, we are kind of a very diverse group. And we help people go through that process. So one question is, like, why does Unicode control emoji? It's not obvious why a large kind of, like, nonprofit in California is regulating a global visual language. Part of it has to do with the fact that emoji started in Japan back in kind of the late 90s. There was an original set that became popularized by a company called Docomo. In fact, it's so important that it was collected by the Museum of Modern Art in New York City as part of a permanent contribution to design history. And what happened was in 2007, there were a lot of proliferation of companies that were using emoji in Japan. But big American companies like Google and Apple wanted to start selling their devices and start, you know, using Gmail in Japan. And in order to do that, they needed to have emoji, because Japanese people would be incredibly upset if they couldn't have their emoji through their other communication devices. So a group of companies came to Unicode in 2007 and said, help. And what was so interesting was they needed to unify, like, all the existing diverse emoji, and which is why a lot of the weird emoji on your phone come from Japan. And it took about a bunch of years, 3 years. So the mission of Unicode is to enable everyone speaking every language on Earth to be able to use their language on computers and smartphones. And this is really considered a human rights issue for Unicode, because, you know, the popular languages, the companies are going to work really hard to encode, because they want to sell devices in those countries, right? Like, you know, if you're in India, all the different languages, if, you know, Ethiopia, Thailand, the popular languages have now been covered, and they're working on languages that are either kind of very minority or tribal, or sometimes, you know, almost extinct. And there are three major projects to Unicode. So the part that we're talking about today is encoding characters. There are about 100,000 characters that Unicode has encoded, not only emoji, but, like, when you see the letter A, or you see the Chinese character for I, like wo, or if you see different Arabic characters, all of those have a little piece in Unicode real estate. Another major project they do is basically all the information that lets you localize a computer system to, like, a certain geography. So, for example, like, what it's everything from, like, what is the currency, what is the, you know, how do they look at time? Is it a 24-hour clock? Is it not? What do you call an emoji in that language? How do you alphabetize? Things like that. Then, which is actually different in different alphabets, which is interesting. And another thing that they contribute in terms of, like, the entire world of computing is a bunch of programming languages that actually, like, deal with Unicode, so that you don't have to deal with Unicode on a very minute basis. So things like this are, like, how do you sort emoji? Like, how do you alphabetize emoji? Like, someone has to, like, give you the functionality to be able to do that. So one thing that's really funny is a couple years ago, someone made this creature, which is a seal deer, in part because they misheard seal deer as, like, CLDR, and that is why it's one of the little mascots. And the CLDR is, again, that library of geographic localization. So, you know, fast forward 2007 to 2010, Unicode came out with its first set of emoji. So this was the original emoji set, and it just arrived on your phones. And in fact, I'm actually curious, of some of the original smileys, these are 10 of them. And I'm curious, what is your original favorite smiley in like emoji world?
And in just a moment, we'll start to see the live results coming in. Wow.
Tears of joy. I have to say, tears of joy is actually Oxford Dictionary Word of the Year, I think in 2015. And it was the first time an emoji ever became like Word of the Year. That is fascinating. So 2010, emoji were introduced as a set by Unicode. 2011, Apple decides to add emoji into the keyboard. And then you see this thing where emojis just like starts taking off because apparently we tapped into some visceral desire by humans to communicate in small pictures. So one thing that has been really fascinating to me is like, what do people think, what does this emoji mean to you? This is actually one of the more classic, this is actually one of the emoji, sorry, that was added after the first generation. And it's actually one of my favorite emoji. So if you have the ability to, we can either pull, we can put it in chat actually. I think that might be better. If people just want to say in chat, what does the upside down emoji mean to you? And I will say that this is actually a very confusing question, because if you start typing the emoji upside down in Google, the autocomplete are, what does it mean when a guy sends it to you? What does it mean when a girl sends it to you? You know, what is it, you know, just in terms of the meaning, what does it mean in flirting? So clearly this emoji causes a lot of angst in the community. So the question is, who can propose an emoji? And the short answer is anyone can. You just, at this point, send your proposal. It should be fully formed, like the ones that we had discussed before, to docsubmit@unicode.org. And it's just an email address. You get a response that either it's a good emoji proposal or not a good emoji proposal. One of the best emojis that kind of went through that process was from a 15-year-old girl who's Saudi Arabian, who lived in Germany, and she wanted a hijab emoji. You know, she proposed it in 2016, and now it's there. There was a group of Argentinians who actually kind of advocated for a mate emoji. This nonprofit that deals with girls' rights wanted a menstruation emoji. So they originally proposed bloody underwear, which is like a terrible emoji for many different reasons. Instead, we did blood drop, which is sort of a more atomic emoji. One of the most powerful things I think that has emerged on emoji keyboards in the last couple of years is the fact that you can have different skin tones, right? Originally, there were only yellow skin tones, which was kind of meant to be not human, but a lot of people interpreted to be white. And the person who you can thank for that is a woman named Katrina Parrott, the woman on the left. She kind of proposed it because one day her daughter came home and said, you know, I wish I could represent myself, you know, on the emoji keyboard or with an emoji, I think it was. And her mom, Katrina, was like, that's great, honey. What's an emoji? But she then kind of got in her head, like, just like I did, we're going to go add skin tones to emoji. And she approached Unicode and did a beautiful proposal. Woman's flat shoe and the one-piece bathing suit, because people felt they didn't only want to sexualize, you know, yellow dot bikini. That was by a mom who had, mom of three girls, now four girls. One of my favorite ones also is the emoji with one eyebrow raised, as we sometimes call it the Colbert emoji. That was by just a guy out of Germany. And sometimes you see countries kind of advocating for emoji. So Finland, for example, wanted a sauna emoji. And these were like, this is what they proposed, which is kind of weird and creepy for all kinds of reasons. Like one, these people have no feet and they're also naked. So this is like going to pass like zero in the emoji world. So we helped them take a proposal and, you know, like come up with different versions. Like what should the steam look like? Should they be holding a ladle? You know, should they be dressed? Should they be, you know, should they have a towel? And at the end of the day, after much kind of debate, what ended up happening was person in a steamy room, which just looks like a person coming out of a shower. So you can see sort of the iterations in terms of how emoji have evolved in that proposal process. So one of the reasons I care a lot about emoji is because of I grew up speaking Chinese, and you see a lot of relationship between emoji and sort of Chinese, like iteration over time. So, for example, there is the character for fire, and if you look at the left, that is sort of the old character for fire, like 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, and you see how it's evolved, and you can see the modern day emoji on the right. You can see it for the word for mouth. You can see tree is another one. To see the consistency from Chinese characters to the emoji characters is really fun. Then you have sun, sorry, you have moon, now you have sun. But what's great about Chinese is you can mix and match the meanings. So two trees, for example, in Chinese means forest, and then you can have sun and moon together, which means bright, ming. Did I get that? And it's fun when you start combining things that have a more subtle meaning. So this character is a roof with a pig underneath it. So like what happens when you have a roof under, you know, a roof with a pig? And so you think maybe it's a farm, maybe it's a barn, but it actually means in Chinese home or family, jia. So it's sort of very telling that the way that the Chinese used to think of what home was is where you kept your pigs. One of the interesting things is how the female character ni is treated. So this is a woman underneath a roof. Again, you might think like, oh, it's like home, right? Like there's a woman, she's underneath the roof, maybe something else. But actually this character an means peace, which means like in a Chinese world, things were at peace when a woman was like underneath a roof or like at home, which I think is fascinating. And one thing that always bothered me as a little kid was the word, if you take ni and you add it to zi, or like the character for a child or little boy, you put it together, you're like, oh, family, or like mother, or like something like that. But actually, no, this character means good, right? Which means that the standard for like goodness or quality back in like ancient China was a woman who had a little kid, specifically a boy little kid. That's like the standard for like achievement. So you can see the way that the female characters are used in all kinds of creepy ways in Chinese. So three women characters together means evil. You know, with a tree, this is like greedy. Then you have slave, and you have jealousy, and you have adultery, all with the female Chinese radical. And so growing up, that was sort of imprinted in me. And then when I looked at emoji in 2015, I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. There are all different ways to be emoji as men. Like they had all kinds of jobs. You know, you could be a cop, you could be a detective, you could be, you know, a guard, you could be Santa Claus even. But with women at that point, there were only four things you could be. You could be a princess, a bride, a dancer, or a Playboy bunny. Those were the only things. So what was great was Google, I guess, was also really bothered by this. And so they were able to sort of combine emoji in different ways. So in the same way in Chinese, you can combine emoji. A lot of the emoji that you see on your keyboard aren't single emoji. They're actually combinations of emoji. So all the skin tones are actually the original yellow character plus a skin tone. The rainbow flag is actually your rainbow plus a flag to get you that rainbow flag. And then this is key. A lot of the occupations that you see are actually the woman emoji or the man emoji plus something else, like whether or not it's a tractor or it's a chef or it's a teacher. It's in combination, you get to see a new emoji. So we call them those compound emoji. And that's why it's sort of interesting to debate, like, how many emoji are there? Because there's, like, unique emoji versus all the combination emojis. One of our favorite projects is actually the interracial couple, what we did with Tinder. So we added, like, the fact that you could be not just yellow people hanging together. And so one thing I wanted to know, but we don't actually have to officially poll, you can just write it in the chat, which is how important are skin tones to the family emoji? Because if you notice something, if you press on a family, they're only yellow at this point. And this is actually a big and complicated debate for Unicode at this point, because it's so hard to implement and we're trying to figure out, you know, how important is it to people? And it hasn't been it's been really, really hard to work through. Like, much debate, many memos, lots of drama. So of the emoji that Emoji Nation has helped create, these are just some of them. And these are the people who helped create it. I think some of those people may actually be on the Zoom call just for entertainment. And this is kind of interesting. I just wanted to show you the frequency of use of emoji. Each one of these bands is about an order of magnitude, not quite, but about an order of magnitude. And by far, like, heart and tears of joy outrank everything. In fact, tears of joy by itself is 10% of all emoji, like, use, which is, like, stunning to me. Because I get it, sort of, but not that it's, like, 10% of all emoji use. So it's sort of interesting to figure out what is the future of emoji. You know, I've worked with a professor at Stanford who feels very strongly that emoji, like, you shouldn't have little pictures regulated by a small group of people, basically, that work mostly out of California. And he came up with an idea that you can maybe, you know, like, give every single little picture a code and then pass those codes back and forth, but then they have to recall, you know, kind of basically look up what that picture is. And that's, it's a little bit tricky. The other one that I find really interesting is something called a QID emoji proposal. This is fascinating because it basically proposes to use a QID, which is like, what is a QID? QID is actually the number in Wikipedia or Wikidata that assigns every entity in Wikipedia a number. And that is actually how different pages on different language Wikipedias get linked together. So, you know, Earth or President Obama, they share the same wiki, like, data QID. So the idea is, like, can we use the ID numbers from Wikipedia to as a form of passing numbers back and forth around emoji? And that's a little controversial for different reasons. Some people are, like, very mixed about that. So, you know, what emoji are we working on? In fact, a lot of smiley faces. One question I have is, smiley faces prove very popular. Some of our friends have worked on some of these. These are not the original generation, but the second generation of faces. So if you guys want to take a poll and you know, kindly tell me, of those that we passed in the recent years, how many really, really resonate with you?
I'll admit, Jenny, some of these newer ones remind me of Garbage Pail Kids from our days
yes.
growing up, if you remember those.
I'm kind of curious. Oh, good. Thank you for the heart, the three heart one. That is one, that was a controversial one, actually, because people felt like the heart eyes one sort of was redundant. I mean, I felt like it was very different, because one, I thought the heart eyes one, like the double heart eyes, was about, like, lust. Whereas this one's the little hearts are more about, this is something I really like. So there's more to go, but I feel like we can just do, I have a little emoji spelling bee if you guys kind of want to get in on that, or I'm totally available for any, like, deep emoji questions that you have in your heart.
Sure, please feel free to raise your blue hand at this point. And as folks start to raise their hands, Jenny, I'm curious to ask, how problematic has it been that different companies and different devices can depict the same emotion, the same emojis in different ways? Like, I, for instance, for at least a year, used to think that the emoji that kind of looked like this was someone sort of doing jazz hands and sort of excitedly. And I only eventually realized that I was hugging people every time I sent that one.
Yes.
And I'm wondering just how problematic or how deliberate this is that different devices.
I'm going to answer that question slightly differently. The main problem with the jazz hands ones isn't the fact that different companies, you know, show it differently, which is a problem. It's mostly that we discovered a little bit too late that while emoji smileys can have hands, they can't have arms. So, which is why, you know, it kind of works when you have the emoji that's like thinking, but it really doesn't work when you have like no hands. So it ends up being like either groping hands or jazz hands, mostly because you can't depict the arms. This is also an issue for us because we're trying to do salute. Like, how do you show a hand? Do you show the arm? Like, it's a very weird because smiley faces apparently have disembodied hands and no body to go with it. So separately, yes, it is a big problem So one of the key things about Unicode is that it tells you what the character is and gives you a guidance image, but Unicode draws the image as zero. Like, when it shows up on your phone or device, it's because Apple or Google or Microsoft or Facebook or Twitter, they had designers in-house that, like, took the spec from Unicode and then, like, kind of, like, drew a certain way. And there have been a lot of problems in the past. So there's like, actually an emoji with X's for eyes, and that's supposed to be dizzy face on Apple, but they did it with X's, which just looks like dead concussive face. And so there's been a lot of effort in the kind of recent years to try to get everyone to align for a certain amount of consistency. Okay, more questions.
Yes, let's call on someone from the group. You'll see a prompt to unmute yourself if called on here. Let's see, do use the blue hands, and Arturo and Rongxin, who do we have first?
Okay, so I'm going to ask a basic question. Mm-hmm. So are we just propose the emoji and hand it over to the developer team, or just are we being there for every step? Do we get to contribute to our idea throughout the whole process?
So if you're a normal person, so like just, you know, not part of Apple or Google, you submit the proposal, it comes in, it's like very mysterious, you'll get some emails back. Sometimes if you join us in our Emoji Nation Slack, we'll help you, so at least you have a little bit more transparency. And then you go back and forth, and then at the point that it's kind of accepted, it kind of gets sucked into the emoji vortex. And you get to see the updates as like the Unicode Consortium publishes all their documents on their website. And so you'll see your emoji kind of like weirdly move through the process. Like, did it get approved at a or like thumbed up at a quarterly meeting? Did it like get approved in the annual thing? And then once it disappears into the the vendors like the Apple, Google, Facebooks of the world, I don't basically know nothing until World Emoji Day. Actually, World Emoji Day is July 17th, which is in a couple of days, and that is where oftentimes people will kind of reveal their emoji. Sometimes you can get like sneak peeks. But for many of the emoji that I even proposed, like, I have no idea what they're going to look like until, like, World Emoji Day. Like, dumpling. I was like, oh, that's a really photorealistic dumpling when it came out. But it's kind of a cool feeling, right? Because it's, like, billions of keyboards impacted. Like, you are one person, and you've, like, managed to touch humanity in a very, very little way, but across billions of people. So if you add it up, it still feels like a lot. More questions.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
What I want to know is, what is this? Is this a prayer hands or
yes.
Is this a high five?
Yes, so this is interesting. It is actually originally neither. It is originally the Japanese way of saying thank you. So if you type thanks, often, at least in an English language keyboard, this will come up. That being said, emoji can be whatever you want it to be. Does that make sense? So, you know, what does the upside down smiley face mean? Like, that's sort of an interesting situation. In some ways, it means what, just like in any language, it means what the consensus of something may mean. So, like, now we have the word, like, lit. Something is lit. But it used to mean, like, you know, like, lit on fire or, like, a past tense of light. But now it has its own, like, kind of slang meaning. And I think a lot of people do use this as high five. It can also be prayer, but it was originally thank you. But you can use it in any way you want, actually, I would say. Yeah, it can be namaste. Yeah, totally, namaste. Oh, question.
Okay, I'm Mohammed from Egypt. I was asking about, the Yao Ming Chinese player called Yao Ming?
Yes, Yao Ming.
Yeah.
Tall Chinese person.
2010 or 2011, people used to create emojis using like two brackets and F-A-K-S-S. People created it with these kind of emojis needed proposal and approval from the Unicode committee, or how were they created?
As I mentioned before, one of the things that Unicode does not ever do is celebrities, deities, logos, or brands, just because like once an emoji, always an emoji. There's also like a lot of IP issues. So you can't ever have, like, what is a famous, like, even, like, a Mona Lisa emoji, I think, wouldn't be possible, even though that's, like, an artwork. So if it's an emoji based on, like, Yao Ming, they would just have to find a, you know, Chinese basketball player or something like that. There are kind of interesting ways to describe emoji, to describe people using existing emoji, if that makes sense. But anything that is very specific, Unicode doesn't touch. That being said, there are lots of wonderful stickers and GIFs and other kind of, you know, visual means of communication through messaging that the rest of the world has covered, right? So Unicode is very specific. Emoji is very specific. It is pictures that can be encoded in the same form as text. And the way that I often like to explain to people what it means is like, can it show up in the subject line of an email? If it can, that's mostly, then it's an emoji. If it's not, it's probably like a sticker. So a lot of these sort of animoji or the memoji that, or bitmoji that you see all the, a lot of platforms adding, they're just like GIFs or pings or JPEGs or whatever. They're just little images that you can still send. You just can't like put in the subject line of an email.
Well, thank you, Mohammed, for that question. Jenny, mindful of everyone's time, should we spend a few minutes on emoji spelling bee to give everyone a chance to partake?
Yeah.
And then if you have time, we can take a few final questions.
Yeah, yeah. Let me do the share. So this is tricky. If you have a phone, I would actually recommend doing it on your phone because it's actually really hard to submit emoji on your device. But if you go to emojispellingbee.com/submit, one thing, this is actually an interesting, this is a very big emoji that we've gone through several rounds with, and we're still not sure how to completely convey earthquake. There is some debate, some people say, well, you can already kind of, you can already convey it. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'm kind of curious basically from the population, you know, just everyone, if I asked you try to convey earthquake through emoji, how you would do it, if that makes sense. You know, so the site is emojispellingbee.com/submit, and then you just kind of like type in, you can type in your name, and you can type in what the prompt was, and then you can just type in your answer. This is actually information that I will send to a researcher, if that makes sense. Because we're trying to figure out is if there are semantic gaps within emoji land. But I can also screen share while we're at the on the phone. We can also screen share. These are kind of some of the things that people have done for earthquake, which is kind of interesting. Can you guys see this? Oh, I can. Do you guys see yourself then as a result, which is a little bit problematic? I'm going to try to. Do you see mostly the Chrome?
We see your the Emoji Spelling Bee tab, but also your other tabs.
That's fine. I don't care. it's fine. But you can see all the little. Oh, that's cute. I like that one for earthquake. This one. That's cool. I will take this back to a bunch of different folks and share. This is actually like pretty good. Also on Emoji Spelling Bee, this is just for our own entertainment again. If you can describe COVID this entire year through emoji, take your time. And as you do that, I'll answer the next question.
Great. Hi. I just got a question. Like recently, a few years back, some of the emojis got modernized and they weren't as pressing as, you know, skin tones. It was like the elephant and the turtle that got modernized. So I was kind of wondering what process that goes through and who decides that they need to be updated.
So it's on the it's the vendors. Like they kind of decide they want to update their emoji. So I think Google, maybe like a year or two ago, maybe more than a year or two, they suddenly did like a complete refresh of all of their emoji to get their visuals updated. I think Facebook recently did a release that sort of also like kind of unified their looks across a bunch of things. So in terms of when you are using a device, the decision about that way a specific emoji is depicted was from the creator of that device or operating system, right? So Facebook controls emoji. You know, WhatsApp has like slightly different emoji from Facebook, which I think is interesting, even though they're owned by the same company. Google, Apple, Twitter, Samsung has its own like little splinter group of emoji, even though, you know, they're also they use a form of Android, if that makes sense. So yes.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you to everyone for joining us here. If you'd like to follow up with Jenny, her contact information is on her final slide here, jenny@emojination.org. And thank you for making today possible, Jenny.